welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of science fiction. Later on, it's X-1 from 1957, but first, quiet please. The story called One for the Book, an ABC broadcast from November 21st, 1948.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. The American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for today is called One for the Book. Once upon a time, when there were more lieutenants than lieutenant colonels in the Air Force, and when you could tell a cadet by his blue suit like a mailman's, a thing happened. And if you think the boys from the bright blue yonder got snafu'd sometime in this last war, brother, I'm here to tell you ain't seen nothing yet. Because this was the largest, the most comprehensive, the doggondest. Well, I have to tell you. And the thing about it is, this snafu isn't over yet. It won't be over for 9 years. Listen, I'll tell you. Ever hear of Muroc Dry Lake? Well, you go out San Fernando Road and you turn off at Fremont Pass onto 6 instead of going up over the ridge route. You go up through Mint Canyon, see, and on through Palmdale and Lancaster. And then you take a road off to the right by the SP station. After about 40 miles of Joshua trees, you get to Muroc, and a big, tough MP tells you, turn around and go back where you came from. Because that's where they got the jets, where guys are ringing them out so fast they sometimes get where they're going before they've started. And they tore up the welcome mat a long time ago. But back in the early part of 1937, well, it was kind of different. Muroc, which incidentally is not an Indian name, it's just the name Corum spelled backwards like on the radio. Corum Brothers was ranchers that owned a joint. And it's just what you think it is, the bottom of an old dried-up lake. It's flat as a billiard table, flatter than the one in the officer's club at Maxwell. And back in those days, you could take your car out in the middle and open her up to 80 and sit back and watch. Look, Mama, no hands. Which was quite a lot of fun till some newspaper guy blew a tire and did 108 snap rolls with it, with the customary results. Well, it ain't like that today. I mean, the lake's still there, but it isn't a lonesome place anymore. The lobo wolves and the coyotes and the rattlesnakes and the roadrunners have scrammed. They got an installation there that... Well, never mind. You're not going to see it, but it's a biggie. And the lake itself is about the biggest landing field in the world. You could set down anywhere, practically. Well, the Air Corps decided back in 1937 to have them a big air maneuvers there at Muroc. So in came about everything they had that could fly. Martin V-10Bs from Langley, P-26s from Selvidge and Maxwell Randolph, and a bunch of skinny blue things they called PB-2As that came from... I don't have any idea. And over at March Field at Riverside, they had a flock of A-17s, attack jobs, two-seaters that North have made. They had holes in their flaps, I remember. First ones to have holes in their flaps. And there was a lot of other miscellaneous stuff. It was quite colorful. P-26s painted OD. The bombers black and yellow. They all had yellow wings. The PB-2As were blue and the A-17s shiny Doral. Everybody had the red and white stripes on the rudder and the big old white star and the blue circle on the wings. All 300 of them. All we had, practically, in 1937. And anti-aircraft, complete with a 1937 version of radar, a cluster of big horns on a trailer with a guy wearing earphones in the middle of them. You couldn't spit half a mile away if the horns was pointed at you on account of you bust the guy's eardrum. And there was a bunch of movie guys taking pictures. They had plenty of expense money. They didn't shoot crap so good. So, one way and another, it was quite a thing. And, brother, it was hot. Yeah, it still is. It'd get down to 40 or 50 in the early morning, and by noon it was up to 115 with the sun bouncing off that white lake bottom and mirages everywhere you looked. Well, I was a crew chief in a P-26 squadron from Selbridge, see? Oh, excuse me, I didn't introduce myself. Westlake's my name. Max Westlake, Captain USAF. I was a staff sergeant in 1937. Up there at Muroc, I got acquainted with a guy. Of all things, a sergeant in an anti-aircraft outfit named Bill Carrant. And I remember how this snafu started. Bill and I were sitting in a bar in Lancaster one Saturday, drinking beer, listening to Pancho Barnes, God rest her soul, telling about buzzing a church steeple in Long Beach and a Jenny. And a couple of elements of B-10Bs went over. Bill Carrant, he said he'd buy another beer.
I'll buy another beer, Max.
I'm going out and sit on the porch and read.
Read? What do you want to read for when you can drink beer? Free beer.
I found a couple of magazines.
Let's see.
Go on, drink your beer.
Super science stories. Miraculous stories. You like that kind of junk?
Well, what if I do?
A lot of hooey.
No, they're not.
Guys flying rockets and taking off for the moon and malarkey like that.
Yeah? Listen, in 20 years, the stuff in these books will be ancient history.
What do you mean?
In 20 years, people will be flying rockets.
In 20 years, they'll be writing the same kind of guck, and people will be flying old-fashioned airplanes, Bud, and we'll be shooting them down.
And you wait and see.
Yeah.
In another 20 years, airplanes, rocket planes, will be going so fast you won't be able to see them, much less shoot them down.
How fast?
Oh, a couple thousand miles an hour.
A guy couldn't fly that fast.
Why couldn't he?
Well, he'd outrun himself. He'd come in for a landing, and 15 minutes later, you'd hear him.
You can fly as fast as sound.
You're nuts.
Well, a bullet flies faster than sound.
But there ain't anybody riding it.
Well, they get a big enough bullet, somebody will ride her.
Bring me another beer.
They get me one, I'll fly it.
You'd feel pretty funny starting out someplace on Saturday and getting there on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, well, listen, it'll happen.
In them magazines.
These magazines told a lot of things that have come true, Bill.
For instance?
Well, I couldn't give you an instance right now, but they have.
I'll take beer.
Yeah, you watch and see. One of these days, I'll come bouncing in someplace in one of these rocket jobs, and you'll be right.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll kiss your foot at high noon right in front of everybody. Now, you want a beer? You're going to sit there reading about buzzing the man in the moon in a skyrocket. Or what?
I did both. And we bummed a ride back to the lake after a while, and I went to bed. Bill Carrant was pretty disgusted when he got there and found out he had to stand guard because the sergeant that was supposed to be had broke out with the measles. And he put on his overcoat and stopped by my tent for a cigarette before he went out where it was cold. We talked, and he left, and I went to sleep. Well, I woke up in the middle of the night, see? I couldn't get back to sleep. So I got up and put on my pants and shoes, a flying jacket. I went out to the anti-aircraft battery. I said, "Hey, Carrant. Hey, Bill Carrant.
Who's that?"
"Me. Westlake, Max Westlake."
"What are you doing up?"
"Yeah, I couldn't sleep."
"Well, I wish I could. I'm about froze."
"How much longer you got?"
"Half an hour. Wouldn't have a bottle, would you?"
"Oh, I'm sorry." "Gee. Pretty night, ain't it?"
"I'll give it to you."
"Millions of stars."
"Yeah."
"Ever fly at night, Bill?"
"And I ain't going to. I ain't going to fly at all."
"That's swell up there with the stars."
"I'll stay here."
"I wonder what's up there."
"I got no curiosity at all."
"Yeah. I'm going to find out some one day."
"In your skyrocket?"
"Oh, probably." "What was that?"
"Search me."
"Sounded like it came from up there."
"Probably one of your skyrockets."
"Well, I don't think there's anybody up tonight."
"I don't see anything."
"I wonder what it..." "Hey."
"What?"
"Look up there."
"Where?"
"Right there, by the Big Dipper." "What is it?"
"I don't see anything." "Say, you know what that is? That's a parachute."
"Say, that's what it is. Only that's the biggest parachute."
"There goes the searchlight. They saw it over at A battery. gosh, that is a big one.
Yeah.
Wonder who it is.
That's a funny-looking thing.
Looks like a box or something.
It looks like part of an airplane.
There goes the crash truck.
I didn't see any airplane, Bill.
Maybe it was one of your skyrockets.
Oh, shut up. Give me your field glasses.
He's going to hit awful hard.
Give me the glasses. Oh, he sure did. Yeah, that's part of an airplane, Bill. They're pulling a guy out of it. In some kind of funny suit.
What, soup and fish?
It's kind of like a diver's suit, kind of like a space flyer's suit.
I know where he came from.
Where?
He bailed out of Goofy Stories magazine.
I handed back the glasses to Bill Carrant, and I walked over to the infirmary. That's where they'd take whoever he was, I figured. And in a minute, the crash wagon came back, and they carried the fella in. I sat there a minute and talked to Daniel Webster, the medic that had the duty. They were fussing around with the fella inside the ward, the doc and everybody. I sat there talking. There was a piece of metal lying on a stretcher that one of the medics had picked up where the thing crashed. I looked at it. U.S. Air Force, it was stenciled on it. U.S. Air Force and a number and XF-131. What's XF-131 mean, I said. Why, I said to myself, U.S. Air Force. This is the Army Air Corps. What's the U.S. Air Force? Something new? And what's XF-131? I know what a P-26 is and a PB-2A and a B-10B, but what's an XF-131? And then the doctor called me, and I stood up, surprised.
Sergeant Westlake, come in here.
Sir?
I said come in here.
Yes, sir.
In here.
Yes, sir.
Ever see that man before?
Why, no, sir.
Sure?
Well, he looks kind of familiar, but is he,
He's got a slight concussion, and I've given him a shot.
Who is he, sir? Is he from here?
You don't know him?
Why, no, sir, but he sure looks familiar, but...
What's your first name, Sergeant?
Sir?
Your first name.
Oh, Max. Huh. What's the matter, sir?
Sergeant, that man's name is Max Westlake, too.
Huh?
Only he's a major in the United States Air Force. What do you make of that, Sergeant? Hey?
What would you have made of it? I looked at the guy more carefully. And then I saw why he looked familiar. I'd seen that puss in the mirror every morning for 22 years. There was the scar on the eyebrow where I drove the car into the lamppost. Only it was on the wrong eyebrow. Then I remembered I wasn't looking into a mirror. I said, Doc, I don't get it. He said, don't you? And I said, well, sir... So I went out. And just as I was going out of the tent, in walks Bill Carrant. And I must have looked funny because Bill grabbed me by the arm.
What's the matter with you, Max?
Huh?
Well, you look as if you're too...
Wait a minute, Bill. I think I've got something figured out.
What are you doing for the love of...
I'm taking off my shoes, Sergeant Carrant.
What for?
Well, it's not exactly high noon, Sergeant. But you're going to kiss my foot just the same.
Huh?
That's right.
Why?
Because, Sergeant Carrant, that guy in there, that guy that flew in here in a skyrocket, that major in there, is me. And so the snafu began. I got called over to the colonel's tent right after breakfast. He was sitting there with the doctor. They looked up when I get my heels pretty close together and placed my hand, fingers extended and joined against my right eyebrow.
Sit down, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
The doctor tells me this fellow who bailed out last night has the same name you have.
Yes, sir.
Looks a lot like you, too, Sergeant.
You know him, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Said last night you didn't.
Well, I got it all straightened out in my mind now, sir.
Well?
He's me, sir.
Sergeant, have you lost your buttons?
No, sir, I don't think so, sir.
Say that again, Sergeant.
Sir, I said, no, I don't think so.
No, what you said before.
Oh. He's me, sir.
Cross your knees, Sergeant.
Sir?
Cross your knees.
Yes, sir.
Ow!
Reflexes are all right.
Sergeant, do you mind explaining what you're trying to give us? I've got a tactical program on this morning, and I... Go ahead, Sergeant.
Well, sir, it's perfectly simple. The aviation is progressing, sir.
So what?
Well, sir, it's perfectly simple. This Major Westlake, who is me, flew in something like a rocket plane or something quite a long time in the future. You understand, sir?
Go ahead, sir.
And he flew so fast, he... Well, he just got here before he started, sir.
Sergeant.
Sir?
Nothing. Go on.
Well, sir, that's all there is. Sometime I'll be a major like he is. I mean, like I am. No, what do I mean? I mean, if he's me, I'm a major. But I'm still a sergeant. I mean, I'll be a major and I'll take off. And when I get here, I mean, when I got here, I'm still a sergeant.
Sergeant, please. My head hurts.
I'm sorry, sir, but that's what happened, sir.
Somebody around here is crazy.
Oh, no, sir, not me.
Let's try that again, shall we?
What, sir?
Your theory. I just want to be sure I'm not hearing things, Doctor.
Well, if you're hearing them, so am I. Go on, son.
Well, sir, someday in the future, I'm going to be a major.
You're not if... Well, never mind.
Yes, sir. Someday I'm going to be a major, see, and I'm going to fly a rocket plane or something.
How do you know all this, Sergeant? You got a crystal ball?
No, sir. It's obvious, ain't it, sir?
Not to me. You, Doctor?
Well, you're going to be a major, son.
Yes, sir. Well, I must be. I'm over there in the tent, ain't I, Doctor?
Uh-huh.
And I'm a major, ain't I? You see? Sir?
Huh.
And someday when I'm a major, sir, I'm going to get into this rocket plane, see, and boom, I'm going to take off and I'm going to go so fast that... Gosh, I sure must have been rolling last night.
Sergeant, you must want to get out of the Army awful bad.
Sir, me? No, sir, I don't want to get out of the Army. Well, what makes the colonel think that?
Well, if I ever heard of anybody asking for a transfer to the loony bin, this is it.
Sir, I assure the colonel I am not nuts.
Well, then, why the dickens are you telling me all this?
Sir, the colonel asked me.
Okay, go on. You were taking off in a rocket ship.
Or something like that, sir, boom, like I said, I go so fast that I just run out of time and I landed last night.
You believe that, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Where did you, how did you fall on this theory?
Well, sir, I read science fiction magazines and...
Ah,
you do.
And I just deduced it.
Oh.
Sir... Rocket travel is perfectly possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting theory.
Doctor, are you nuts, too?
I'm really not sure, Colonel.
Well, what are you talking about, then?
I was just looking at this identification card I took out of the Major Westlake's pocket.
What about it?
It's dated November 24th, 1951. 15 years from now.
Snafu and snafu and snafu. The colonel, we didn't have any guardhouse or anything. He confined me to my tent. That is, he confined Sergeant Max Westlake to my tent. Major Max Westlake was still out like a light. He couldn't talk. And me, I didn't have anybody to talk to, but I thought. And the harder I thought, the surer I was right. And the second day I was in there, the colonel came to my tent and he looked about 18 years older. I stood up.
Rest, Sergeant. Now listen, I had the doctor take that major's fingerprints. And I flew them to Washington to be looked up in the big file.
Yes, sir.
The dope came back this morning.
Yes, sir.
I'll read you what they say. The subject fingerprints are those of Staff Sergeant Max Westlake. And so forth and so forth.
there is no record of a Major Max Westlake in the Army Air Corps. Find directions, so forth and so forth.
Oh, yes, sir. That's the way I figured it.
Westlake, if you're running a Sandy on me...
Not running a Sandy, sir.
Come with me.
Where are we going, sir?
Right into the infirmary tent.
Yes, sir.
Now then, you sit here behind this canvas wall and you listen to that fellow talk. And don't say a word. Just nod your head if he's right or shake it if he's wrong. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Listen.
Major, where did you come from?
Here at Muroc, sir.
What outfit are you with?
I'm chief test pilot here.
I see. And what happened, do you know?
Yes, sir. I was flying an XF-131. That's the newest experimental rocket job at a speed of about Mach 7.
What are you talking about?
Sir, 7 times the speed of sound.
What the?
Suddenly, the needle flew way over beyond the mark. I got scared, pushed the automatic cockpit release, and bailed out.
And, how fast do you think you were going then?
Well, I should say about 12 times the speed of sound.
I see. And what was the date of your takeoff, Major?
Why, December 21st, 1957.
Now, look here.
You see? You see, Colonel? You see?
Snafu. Wow. Tafu. Fubar. The Army never saw one like this before. They sent us to the general.
Sit down, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Now, Westlake?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Your brothers?
No, sir.
No, sir.
Now, just a minute. Just a minute, I mean. Westlake?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Stop.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Westlake?
Yes, sir.
Who is this Major Westlake?
He's me, sir.
Sergeant,
we can't prove otherwise, General.
That will do, Colonel.
Yes, sir.
Now, Major Westlake, who is this sergeant?
Sir, I don't know.
Well, isn't he your brother?
No, sir.
Well, who is he then? Answer me.
Sir, I think he's me.
Doctor, are these men crazy?
Not as far as I can tell, sir.
Well, what ails them then?
Sir, I just work here.
Well, now, Major... How come I don't know you?
Well, that I couldn't say, sir. I don't know the general either.
Young man, I have been in the Army 28 years.
Yes, sir.
At 29. I was at Bliss with Lord George Langren when he had the 8th Cavalry.
Yes, sir.
And I know thousands of officers in the Army.
Yes, sir.
But I don't know you.
No, sir.
Young man, do you know the penalty for impersonating an officer?
Sir, I'm not impersonating an officer.
Here's his identification card, General.
Is that your picture, Major?
Yes, sir.
And doesn't look like you.
Well, sir, these pictures never look like the people.
Yeah, that's right. Mine looks like a... Well, this seems to be in order, all right.
It is, sir. I know that.
Are those your fingerprints?
Yes, sir.
They're the sergeant's, Washington says, General.
Now, how could that be?
Well, sir, they have to be me. He's me. I mean, I'm us, sir.
Colonel, has this man ever demonstrated... has he ever had attacks before?
No, sir. He's always been rational, sir. He's one of my best men.
He's rational now, General. That is, I think he is. Kind of, I mean.
Sergeant, do you know that a board may be convened... And that they're liable to throw you right out of the Army?
Sir, I'm not worried about that.
Oh, you're not, huh? Why not?
Because they can't, sir. I have to stay in.
Kindly tell me why?
Because, well, don't you see, sir, I'm going to be a major and I'm going to fly a rocket plane.
The XF-131.
What makes you think so?
Well, I'm here, sir, after all.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to solve this problem once and for all in a military manner. Major Westlake, you are subject to orders, aren't you?
Yes, sir, of course.
And I want this to be a lesson to you other officers, too.
Yes, sir.
You gentlemen are expected to use your intelligence and initiative and not come bothering me with all sorts of details that could just as well be handled in your own bailiwicks. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
Silence. There is a very simple way to solve this problem, as I said. Major Westlake, you are ordered to return to your base.
Sir, I'm at my base. I'm stationed at Muroc Dry Lake. This is Muroc Dry Lake, sir.
Well, how did you get here?
I flew, sir.
How did you get here now?
Sir, I just flew so fast I got here before I started.
I didn't ask you, Sergeant.
That's right, sir. I flew so fast I got here before I started.
Doctor, do you have an aspirin on you? See who that is.
Yes, sir.
Sir, I found something I thought might be important.
Who are you?
Sergeant William Cairns, sir. I'm Sergeant of the Guard today.
What have you got there, Sergeant?
I don't know what it is, sir, but I found it out there where the Major landed.
Major Westlake?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's see it. Let's see it, Sergeant.
I never saw anything like it before, sir, and I thought I'd better bring it to the General.
May I see that, please?
Well?
It's my Mach meter, sir.
Your what?
Mach meter, sir, an instrument that measures speed.
Sergeant Westlake, please.
Excuse me, sir. That's what it is, General. It measures speed in terms of the speed of sound. Mach 1 is sound speed. Mach 2 is twice the speed of sound.
Let's see it. It's very curious. Yes, very, very curious.
All of a sudden, it got jammed, General. You see the needle is jammed way over here on the pin? It indicated probably 12 times the speed of sound, and that was awful fast, so I bailed out.
See if I can't unjam the needle.
There's a ratchet underneath, sir.
I see. It's like a speedometer, isn't it? It turns hard. There. Hey, where did Major Westlake go?
Why, he was right here.
I seen him,
sir. I was looking right at him. When you turned the thing meter back, he just turned all transparent, and then he disappeared.
What?
Sir, I think the General just unscrewed him right back where he came from.
That was it. The General turned the Mach meter backward, and that's all. But I like to never got out of all that snafu. Well, I'm a captain now, and it's only 9 more years, and I'll be a major. And I'll fly an XF-131 here at Muroc, and my Mach meter will go haywire, and my gosh, have I got to go through all that again?
The title of today's Quiet Please story is One for the Book. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper, and the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Dan Sutter played Sergeant Carrant. Melville Ruick was the colonel. The doctor was played by Charles Eggleston. General, Lloyd Buckley. As for Major Westlake, well, we leave that for a guess. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, for a word about next week, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet, Please. My story for next week is called My Son John.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
And now, a listening reminder. There's an exciting story waiting for you this afternoon on David Harding Counterspy. See what happens when a flood of counterfeit currency threatens to disrupt the entire financial structure of a South American country and the counterspies are called in to investigate. Tune in David Harding Counterspy on your ABC station. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday, an ABC episode from November 21st, 1947. The program, in some ways hosted, but mostly written and directed by the prolific radio writer Willis Cooper, the radio horror series Lights Out among his first appointments. In terms of Quiet Please, he wrote all sorts of stories, from suspense to thrillers to horror, and also science fiction. That last story in the company of about 6 others of kind, like Not Enough Time, If I Should Wake Before I Die, The Other Side of the Stars, and The Man Who Stole a Planet. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for X-1, an NBC episode from November 28, 1957, called Shock Troop.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents
X minus one.
Shock Troop. But first, hear this.
This is Bill Goodwin. You know, someone once said humor is the true democracy. And that's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great industries and institutions. Like the first traveling salesman, Jonathan Slick, a pretty shrewd fella who could outswap anyone anytime. Like the time he sold a razor to an Albany farmer who didn't want one. Now, Jonathan bet him $5 that if he made an offer, Jonathan would have a sale. When the farmer offered 2 cents, he got the razor and Jonathan got the 2 cents, plus the $5 bet. Then the farmer felt he'd been cheated, so Jonathan gave him back his 2 cents for the razor, but the farmer never did figure out how Jonathan got away with that $5. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell stories of such legendary heroes with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. And so long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
And now, X minus one and Shock Troop.
In all his 7 major campaigns, Commander Zerum Lassen had never faced anything like this. First, there was the heat, agonizing, insufferable heat. Then there were the jolts, the convulsions. But most unbearable of all was the cross pulse, the interminable, monotonous thrump-thrump of the cross pulse.
Come in. Hello, Barak. Close the bulkhead. This heat's driving me mad.
Zerim, I think we ought to abandon this project.
Abandon?
As chief psychotechnician, I recommend it.
Oh? On what do you base this?
This macroorganism is unlike anything we've ever tried to colonize before. It's much too complicated.
Complicated? Perak, I've colonized life forms on 7 other worlds, and each time I've been advised to turn back.
I know your record, Zerim, but this creature is different.
How?
Well, for one thing, it has a highly organized psychoelectric system. The shock waves are fantastic. I've already lost 3 technicians.
These are shock troops. They know the risk.
And for another thing...
Perak, you're a fine scientist, but you're no leader of troops. This creature we've invaded will be subdued and brought under positive permanent control. We will achieve thermobiological conditioning to reduce the heat. We will achieve damping to muffle the crossbeat. And we will establish neuromuscular controls. And we will do all these things because I say we will. Now come along. We'll inspect the tunnels. Ready?
Yes. I'll open the bulkhead.
Feel that heat.
Oh, the thermo crews are doing everything they can to pull oxygen from the separators.
I'll tell them to work faster. What's the status of the control panel?
I'll see. Amandor.
Sir?
What's the status of the control panel?
We've tapped into motor fibers 1 through 46, Chief. We'll be ready for the central selector hookup very soon.
What about optical auditory intercept?
We're still trying to tap into the subject's visual system, Commander. The screens are set up, but we haven't been able to run a line from the main circuit.
Why not?
Charge in the main trunks is too potent, sir. Our instruments won't take the surges of current.
Any installed transformers or resistances? Now get it down.
But, sir, 2 crews working in this heat with that noise.
I don't care about the heat or the noise. It is absolutely essential that we hook up visual intercept. I want you to...
Convulsions!
Hit the stanchions! Hang on!
It's passed.
I've never seen them quite this bad. How do you suppose causes them?
I don't know. I suspect their reflex actions.
Sir?
What?
Do you suppose this creature knows we're inside it?
Ceaselessly, the shock troops worked inside the host creature, burrowing through capillaries, tapping into nerves, trying desperately to intercept the intelligence and sensations so they might bring it under control. Oxygen was pulled from the separators to cool the tunnels where Commander Lassen's troops worked.
Yes?
Sir, we phased the interior to feedback. We're ready to try for an image on the visual screen.
Excellent. What about vocal auditory?
Completely phased. We haven't broken the speech code yet, but all sounds are clearly audible.
Blast that crossbeat. Can't the crews do something to muffle it?
We're trying. We don't dare go into the main arteries. Not yet, at least.
Have they calcified?
They're trying, Zerim. We've got calcification crews working like demons, trying to harden the central blood vessels.
Very well. Lieutenant, is the screen ready?
Yes, sir. Does the commander wish to monitor himself?
Yes. These are standard controls, I assume?
Yes, sir. Focus is this knob. Brightness control is at the right.
Very good. Now, switch on and we'll see if we can see what this creature sees. A little more focus.
Something's coming through.
It isn't a clear enough image. Bring up the contrast. There.
Well?
It appears that our host is in an enclosed space of some sort. From the orderly flow of articles across the screen, I would say it was moving aimlessly. As an item for resting on, it appears. In the background, a blurred pattern of light and dark stripes. Now, let's hear the auditory reception. May as well get the decoding section working on it.
I'll switch it on, sir. The creature doesn't seem to be vocalizing.
What's the noise?
I believe that's a respiratory sound, sir, made by the creature's oxygen plant.
I'll try to eliminate it. Filter it out.
Yes, sir.
Doc, I tell you, I'm sick.
It's vocalizing.
I'm not trying to pull anything, Doc. There's something wrong inside me. Honest. Doc, please.
Try to break down the pattern. I want to know what the creature is communicating.
Yes, sir.
Well, Carrick, do you still think we should turn back?
We've tapped into the creature's communication system, Zerim. I think controlling it is going to be another matter.
We'll return to X-1 and Shock Troop in just a moment.
All of us, as American citizens, believe in our inherent liberties and freedoms, such as freedom from unwarranted search, either personal or in our homes. In our country, illegal search or forced entry are crimes against which all of us are protected by the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. No house can be entered, and no person can be searched, except through due process of law. Yes, we enjoy this freedom of personal protection, but it is a freedom which carries an equally important responsibility. It is a twofold responsibility, charging us first to be law-abiding citizens, and secondly, to be just and considerate guardians of the law. So accept your responsibility and ensure your freedom.
Inside the subject, the work continued hour after hour, day after day. Inside the control room, Commander Lassen was haggard and weary. Outside, the crews labored in the tunnels, calcifying blood vessels, tapping into sensory nerves, tying circuits across sympathetic nerve fibers, and still no positive control.
Is that him?
Hmm? Oh, Barak. What's happening?
Well, we're making slow progress, Zerim. Between the heat and the cross pulse, the men are beginning to crack up. They need a rest.
Anyone caught loafing on the job will be fed into the disposal units. Those are my orders.
Isn't that a bit harsh?
Are you questioning my authority?
Yes, I think you've been working too hard.
I'll have you... Listen.
What?
The silence. They've done it. Modification section is muffled at crossbeat.
You're right.
What a relief. Come on, let's try the audiovisual again. Maybe we'll be able to hear something now.
There's a picture coming in.
It's the same picture. Blurry, barred pattern. Objects for sitting and reclining. Switch on the auditory.
Right. It's vocalizing.
Listen.
I guess I didn't. It happened all of a sudden. This pain in my heart. Like it slowed down. I'm sick. There's something wrong with me.
If only decoding would crack the speech pattern so we knew what it was saying.
There seems to be another macroorganism in the room with it. Dressed in white, it seems.
Yes, I see.
I'm not thinking, Doctor. You better do something.
I want the speech pattern given number one priority. No time for... That's condition red.
Commander, a vein is ruptured in tunnel C. There's a leukocyte breakthrough.
Get the guns. I want a coagulant crew in there at once.
There are hundreds of the monsters, Commander. Shall we seal off the tunnel?
And lose weeks of calcifying? Come on, we'll try to coagulate.
Commander joined the rush of frenzied emergency troops rushing into the corridor. Ahead, crews were lugging hand sterilizers and broad-spectrum coagulators. Inside the tunnel, the scene was bedlam. There was a break in the wall, hemorrhaging profusely. Crewmen waded knee-deep in the nauseous sea of thrombin. Red corpuscles knocked them off balance. Every so often, a sickening gray leukocyte would rear up and embrace a crewman in a grip of acid death.
Have to retreat. The thrombin's rising. Lieutenant, give the order to fall back and seal off the tunnel.
Yes, sir.
Fall back. Seal the tube. Fall back.
The struggle continued. New tunnels were formed. More nerves tied into central control. Veins and arteries calcified. The heat reduced to a livable temperature. Slowly, the morale of the shock troops inched higher, and Commander Lassen relaxed and grew more amiable.
Well, Peric, ready for the big event?
Yes, my crew is standing by.
Good. We'll try an auditory visual intercept first, and then we'll attempt to control a few responses.
We've tapped into the creature's hearing circuit now so that we can hear what it hears as well as what it says.
Excellent. Switch on the screen. It's coming in now. And the creature is still in the same room, alone, evidently. And it seems to be writing a message of some sort. Oh, wait. It's talking.
My appeal was turned down. And this is it.
Now, let's try a motor response. Lieutenant Mander.
Sir?
Which circuit controls the organism's right extremity?
This one, sir.
Are all circuits properly insulated against electrical surge?
Up to 1 million dynarcs, Commander.
Well, we've never encountered anything higher. That should be safe enough. And here goes. I'll try a simple contraction. It worked! The right limb contracted. Peric, it worked. We've established control.
You're to be congratulated, Commander.
Thank you. Switch on auditory visual again. Yeah. The creature is still writing.
Actually, I don't mind too much. The doctors have discovered that I have a serious condition of the blood vessels and heart. They call it sclerosis. And I've been feeling awful lately. So... I'm not too afraid of what's coming. I'll think of you. Think of me. Love. Sam.
Now, the message is concluded. Let's try another motor response. I'm going to manipulate the creature's legs now to make it locomote toward the barred pattern. Ready?
Ready, sir.
It's moving. Excellent, excellent. Peric, have the crews clean up the remaining circuits. Make absolutely certain that the electrical hazard is reduced to a minimum. I can't afford to lose any more troops. Now, what about the speech code?
Decoding thinks they may break it any moment now.
I'll keep them working. Give the troops extra rations and pay and commend them for a good job. If all goes well, we'll send for colonists within a week.
Exactly 1 week later, Commander Lassen, seated in a compartment that was now fully air-conditioned, silent, and filled with soft Valparaisian music, radioed to the Commissioner of Colonization.
So everything is ready. With the exception of the speech code, we have complete primary control of all circuits. We'll expect first 10,000 colonists as soon as transport can be arranged. Lassen, I'll send that at once. Come in. What is it, Farrakh?
I don't know. There are changes in the intercept screens.
What kind of changes?
Well, for one thing, there's a temperature drop in the upper quadrant of the creature. Then it seems to be changing its surroundings.
I'll come out and have a look.
There, you see? There are other macro creatures in the room now. There. One of them has a black robe.
Well, what's so alarming?
The speech pattern of the black-robed creature is unlike anything we've ever heard before.
Turn on auditory intercept. Strange.
Look at the temperature drop up there.
Let me try touching the creature's cranial region. That explains the temperature drop. The mass of thread-like growth has been entirely removed.
Look, the black-robed one has moved away. Now another creature approaches.
Our host entity is being seated. Now, bands are being placed on its wrists and legs. That's interesting.
I don't like it.
What are you worried about?
I don't know. It frightens me.
Look. Now a dome-like object is being lowered over the creature's head. A great cupola.
It's cutting out the light.
Turn off the auditory.
I don't want to die, Warner. Not in the electric chair.
I wish we knew the speech code. Well, another few days and we'll have it broken. Then, total victory will be ours. Total victory.
What's happening now, Zarim?
I don't know. Everything is quiet. The creature is waiting in the dark for something to happen, apparently. I wonder what.
X-1 has brought you Shock Troop, written by Daniel Gallion and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in our cast were Bernard Lenro as Commander Lassen, Edwin Cooper as Perrock, John Thomas as Mandor, Ralph Camargo as Sam, and Roger DeCoven was the narrator. This is Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by George Boutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production.
We pause now for station identification.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 28th of November, 1957 on NBC. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.